Welcome back for the third hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Greg Kokel is our guest for this short hour, concluding our conversations today. We're going to talk about the Book of Romans and the issue of homosexuality. Have you read any of this lately? Advocates for homosexuality really have no problem with opening up the Bible, even to the places that have been, up to this point, read as condemnations of homosexuality, and arguing from those very passages that what Paul, say in the Book of Romans, is condemning is not homosexuality per se, but some other kind of deviant sexual behavior. We're going to see whether or not those arguments hold water, and we'll find out precisely what Greg Kokel has to say about them during this last hour of Issues Etc. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Greg Kokel is a regular guest here on Issues Etc. and founder of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California. Greg, welcome back.
Thanks a lot, Todd. Hi to you and to my new Lutherans for Life friends that I made last weekend in Omaha. Apparently, many of them listened to your show.
Yeah, I understand you were a speaker there at the Lutherans for Life convention. Tell us how it went.
Oh, we had a great time. I mean, I had a great time. I was speaking all day Saturday, it seems like. I had a couple of workshops in the afternoon, but two plenary sessions in the morning, and tried to do as Stand to Reason usually does, equip people with training to be ambassadors for Christ in particular areas, in this case, the pro-life area. So the people were wonderful, and we had a great time together, and I think a lot of good work got done. I certainly made some new friends.
And so you say you ran into a few Issues Etc. listeners up there.
Yeah, it was nice because here I'm in Omaha. I've never been to Nebraska before with Stand to Reason, and people are coming up to me saying they're familiar with our work, in part because of being on the program with you so many times.
Well, we're always happy to have you. You always bring the keen mind to this conversation, and that is precisely what we're looking for. Let's talk a bit about what Paul is really saying in the Book of Romans, opening chapters, where he chooses, among other things, homosexuality or homosexual acts as indicative of man's corruption.
Yeah, this seems to be fairly straightforward when you read the Book of Romans, particularly in chapter 1 and the last half of it, where he begins his argument that he carries on through the Book of Romans about justification for faith, by faith alone, and we see that statement in verse 17, and then he starts identifying the problem that God saves us from. And in verse 18 and following is a wonderful discourse that's worthy of being read frequently as Paul gives God's perspective of man in rebellion against him. And that perspective is simply that God has made enough revelation of himself to be adequate for people to turn to God in truth, but instead of doing that, people suppress the truth in unrighteousness, is Paul's words, that is that which is known or obvious about God. They choose to ignore it and to push it away, and instead they turn in rebellion away from God to their own devices, and there are consequences to that, and this makes God angry, of course. That's why it starts. The wrath of God is being revealed against all of this unrighteousness, and we have a description of this turn from God and the stages of depravity that result from turning away from God. And at one point, God even gives man over. In other words, he releases the restraints that he has on them. And then you see what turns out to be a rogue's gallery of vice that is described in the last half of the first chapter of Romans. And at the head of that rogue's gallery is a description of homosexuality, not just male homosexuality, but female homosexuality, in which Paul uses homosexuality as an example of man's complete rebellion and turning away from God. Now, of course, this has been so obvious to people for so many years that it hasn't been contested until now. You have a new movement proclaiming homosexuality as a good, healthy, appropriate kind of behavior, and this has entered even into the church as there's been a wave of what might be called homosexual theology that has been reinterpreting the classical texts in the scriptures that have been used to show that God thinks homosexuality is deeply immoral. And that would be the Genesis passage in Sodom and Gomorrah, the Levitical passages where homosexuality is made a capital crime, and then the statement in the New Testament in Romans chapter 1 by Paul. And it is quite amazing how the moves that have been made, and I think especially with this passage because it's the most unequivocal, it seems to me, the moves that have been made to twist the meaning of Paul's teaching here in Romans 1 such that it almost is in favor of the kind of homosexuality homosexuals say that most homosexuals have here in the 21st century.
So let's lay this new view of Paul in the first chapters of Romans on homosexuality out so that we can examine it and see whether or not the text will carry that water.
Okay, good. Now, I'm reading from the New American Standard here, and I think it's the most precise. A lot of folks work with the NIV. I'm actually not happy with that translation because I think there's some valuable precision that's lost. And so I'm reading from the New American Standard, and some of the details are really important here, Todd. This passage that I just described in general is being characterized by homosexual theological activists, and I think that's the best way to put them, as being a combination of different things. First of all, it is Paul looking across the Mediterranean at life in the capital of Greco-Roman culture. They say that homosexuality is not the focus of his condemnation. It's just one item on the list. And Paul's explanation for all of this is that they've refused to acknowledge God. And so there is an attempt to show, first of all, that this is a cultural kind of thing that Paul is concerned with, that really he's speaking of temple prostitution with young boys, and that people are involved in pagan worship services which involved homosexual sex. And it's not unusual, by the way, for pagan worship services to involve sex. But they are saying that the condemnation is of the pagan worship service itself and not necessarily the kind of sex that might be performed there. And then they'll also go on to say that Paul didn't completely understand, some might say, Paul didn't completely understand homosexuality as we understand it today, and that is that homosexuality is something one is born with. And others will say, yes, he did understand it, and he was actually, in the text, accepting those who were born homosexuals from his condemnation. And the classic passage here is, and I'll just read it, and then I'll go wherever you want with the refutation, but it says here in the New American Standard, that verse 26 and following, "For this reason God gave them over to degrading passions, for their women exchanged the natural function for that which is unnatural. And in the same way also the men abandoned the natural function of the woman and burned in their desire toward one another, men with men committing indecent acts and receiving in their own persons the due penalty of their error." And on Paul goes, and it's this particular passage that there is a special kind of twist that is added by the homosexual theological activists, and that is this. They say, if you look closely here, what God is objecting to is people violating their natural tendency. So Paul is saying, you know, there are men who are naturally heterosexual who go against their natural desire and instead burn in lust for those of the same sex, maybe associated with the temple prostitution, maybe not, but it's this violation of one's natural sexual orientation that Paul is proscribing here. He is not referring to those who have the natural sexual orientation of homosexual. For them, it is natural for them to burn in desire for their own sex, and it would be unnatural for them to burn with heterosexual desire. And so on this take, homosexuals that are born that way, which from their perspective is pretty much everybody who has a homosexual desire, are not in view in Paul's condemnation. And in fact, if any of us as Christians suggest that homosexuals ought to abandon homosexuality and adopt a heterosexual lifestyle, that itself would be a violation of what Paul is teaching here, because then the homosexuals would be going against their natural orientation, which is what Paul prohibits, and our calling for them to be heterosexual in their behavior would really be calling them into the sin that Paul condemns in Romans 1.
Now,
there you have it.
That's clever. But I wonder whether or not it is more clever than it intends to be, and let's just examine this for a moment. Paul lists homosexuality among other vices.
Right.
Would they also argue that those other vices should not be condemned if one can make the argument that one is born to them?
Well, I think what they would say, and I think this would be a fair answer on their part, is they say, no, the other things are clear vices and identified as such, but the vice of homosexuality is only identified as a vice because of the qualifier, in this particular case, that one is going against his natural inclination. And so since that qualifier is offered for homosexuality and not for the other sins, then the thing that matters with the alleged prohibition of homosexuality is really what one's natural inclination is. And Paul is saying you ought not go against your natural inclination. So it does raise the question, why is it that Paul used homosexuality per se as an example of this? And if it was if it was a concern to him to go against one's natural inclination in the sense that they mean, he would also have condemned homosexuals who burned in their desire towards women, which he didn't say. You know, so that would be one small problem with their approach, although their approach is compromised by much greater things than that.
So in essence, the argument is this: Paul really has no problem with the homosexuality as we have come to know it culturally today. In the best of all possible worlds, monogamous and faithful and loving. What Paul has a problem with is heterosexuals who perform homosexual acts in rebellion to God.
Well, that would be their reading, and that would be part of their reading. Another one is there is an attempt to try to dismiss this as being Paul looking at a very restrained cultural circumstance that we're not facing here because there's no temple prostitution involved today. And so they would try to dismiss it on two grounds. One, that it's about temple prostitution in the Greco-Roman Empire, and two, that he's really talking about violating one's natural orientation, and homosexuals of today don't do that because they were born that way. This is their gift from God to them, and they should be allowed to experience their natural sexual desires as God gave it to them.
All right, let's look then, if we could, to determine which of these two views should prevail, because both can't be right, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Either Paul condemns it or he doesn't condemn it.
Right.
Let's look at the passage in question from Romans chapter 1 in detail and tell us what you pull from this passage, whether or not it bears the weight of the new view.
Yeah, okay, let me make a couple of observations on this text. And it's very helpful if people don't have it in front of them, at least to go to it later and look carefully at the wording here. And here I think in some cases the translation is important. So if you have a Living Bible or something like that, or even a New International Version, I'm just not comfortable with those because there are some very specific things in the words here that matter. But something that should be evident to everyone is that this whole passage is about God being mad, okay? I mean, the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of man. So what is God angry about? And there's a specific progression of things that you see that God is mad about. Verse 18, they suppress the truth in unrighteousness. In other words, they know what the truth is, but they hold it down and suppress it with unrighteous motives. Verse 24, the result, God gives them over, and listen to the language here, in the lusts of their hearts to impurity. Now, those are words that suggest, though don't always require, but certainly suggest, sexual sin. And he gives them over because, verse 25, they have exchanged the truth of God for a lie. They have worshipped and served the creature rather than the creator. Now, this is also a little bit suggestive about homosexuality when you consider turning from God to worship the creature, which might be construed as the human body, the same-sex human body. Verse 26, they exchanged the natural sexual function for that which is unnatural. Verse 32, they encourage others to do the same, and therefore the wrath of God rightly falls on them. Verse 18, they are worthy of death. Verse 32, and they are without excuse. Verse 20. Now, this is the sequence of events that comes clearly from the words of the text itself. And it seems to me that this is a text that cannot be misunderstood by a fair reader. In other words, it is a crystal clear condemnation in the New Testament of homosexuality by the Apostle Paul, and watch this, Todd, it is right in the middle of his most brilliant discourse on general revelation.
Why is that significant?
Well, because it's not talking about something going on in Greco-Roman culture, a Mediterranean life across the Mediterranean Sea from where Paul was. He's talking about, actually, he wrote this from Ephesus, probably, this book of Romans, so he's real close. But he's not just looking at the culture there. He is looking at mankind. And this passage, like I said, it's the most famous passage in all of Paul's writings, where Paul makes reference to the general revelation of all people by God, which makes all people culpable. He's talking about the condition of the world and how and what every single person on the world should be knowing, not just a little situation over here. Now, in Corinthians, you might find some things where you have specific references to things going on in that culture with those people, not in Romans. This isn't the sense of the passage. He doesn't start out that way, and therefore someone can't hide behind that to dismiss Paul's reading there. And I think that there is only one way this can be missed, Todd, and that's if somebody is in total rebellion. And that's exactly Paul's point, that homosexual behavior is evidence of active, persistent rebellion against God. And according to verse 32, it's rooted in direct, willful, aggressive rebellion, which would be true. I mean, it's not just, you know, like, oops, I made a mistake. They're fighting God every step of the way. And, you know, it's amazing the words that Paul uses of this. Listen to the language that he uses to describe the behavior he's condemning. And we'll talk about the exception in a few moments, the rejoinder, like this doesn't apply to us kind of thing. But taking at face value, he describes the behavior that looks like homosexuality to me as an impurity and dishonoring to the body, verse 24, an indecent act and an error, verse 27, a degrading passion that's unnatural, verse 29, and not proper and the product of a depraved mind, verse 28. I mean, like I said, this is so clear. There is no way anybody can miss the intent of Paul. Now, you might say Paul's wrong. Okay, well, that's in the game. But you can't say that Paul didn't mean what it seems clearly he was writing about.
So how do we take up the further argument that you introduced us to a few minutes ago, this new view that, look, what Paul really has a problem with is the result of man's rebellion leads to the exchange of the unnatural for the natural.
Right.
But homosexuals today are acting on natural impulses, therefore the condemnation of Paul
right.
in Romans 1 does not apply to them.
Right. It is a very clever move. I've got to hand it to him. Very, very clever. And with some of the translations, you can get away with that because there is a certain ambiguity in the more generalized translation, and I think the NIV is an example of this, that allows them to make this move and seem to be justified. But there actually, I have four arguments against that view, and the first three are really good, but even without the first three, the fourth one, which is my scriptural argument dealing with the words themselves, is unassailable. It is very clear that they cannot make this move given what Paul himself says. Do we have time before a break to go into some of these responses?
Yeah, I think we got time for one or two of them, easy.
Okay, well, let's go with the first one, and this one might take the time until the break, because this is something that people get wrong all the time. This argument that they're offering depends upon the fact that there is such a thing as constitutional homosexuality. That is, homosexuals that are born that way. That is, it's part of their genetic structure. They can't... There's nothing they could do about this. It is determined by their genes, all right? And my response to that is this: simply this. There is, and I'm choosing my words very carefully here, there is no scientific evidence that homosexuality is biologically determined, period. None. In fact, all researchers uniformly report that they have failed to show that homosexuality is biologically innate. Now, some people hark back to a study done by Simon LeVay, who himself is a homosexual, of the hypothalamus of gay men, and he looked at cadavers of homosexual men who had died of AIDS, and he saw that there was a change in the size of the hypothalamus of homosexual men compared to the normal man, or the person who didn't have homosexuality. And so this suggested to people a constitutional element, a genetic element. Here's what LeVay himself says about his study, because the press picked up on this and ran with it. I'm quoting now from LeVay himself. It's important to stress what I didn't find. I did not prove that homosexuality is genetic. I didn't show that gay men are born that way, the most common mistake people make in interpreting my work, close quote. And when you read all the researchers, you see time and time and time again, whether it's the twin studies or any of the other studies, they have failed to scientifically demonstrate that homosexuality is innate, is genetic, is inherited in any sense. It is built into their physical constitution. And if they have failed to do so, then there is no grounds for someone to seize upon this and argue that that this is something that God has made them this way, and therefore Paul is accepting this condition, which he couldn't have known about anyway.
Okay, we've got about 3-4 minutes here, plenty of time to jump into that second argument against this notion that Paul is condemning an exchange of the natural for the unnatural.
Given that, let me just a couple more thoughts on this first point.
Sure.
Because I think it's fair to ask, where did this stuff come from? And if I could recognize, I'd rather recommend a website for people go to. It's not ours, but it's one where a lot of this information can be found. It's called narth.org, www.narth.org, or maybe it's .com. .com, narth.com, and a book they can check out called A Parent's Guide to Preventing Homosexuality. Talk about politically incorrect titles.
Yeah, we've had the Joseph Nikolowski on the program.
Yeah, well, he's the guy, and you'll find the peer-reviewed material, the original source stuff, the primary source documentation on his website, not just his ideas, but the documentation itself, and you'll find out what they're saying about this. But people will ask the question, then, if it's not innate, well, then, where did homosexuality come from? And I think that Christians have unfortunately gone to a different extreme, and they've said, well, it's chosen. Well, certainly the behavior is chosen in the moment, but I don't think it's fair to say that the desire is chosen. And I think we get ourselves in a bind when we say that. What the research is showing is that the desire people will have for the same sex is developmental. That is, through stages of development in life, there are factors that happen that mold their sexual hungers and desires, so that there will be sexual gender confusion, and they begin having sexual desires for their same sex. So they're not choosing it in the sense that we normally think of it. It doesn't mean it's not wrong, but it goes to show it's not innate and it's not chosen. It's this developmental factor that seems to be coming out, and I think it's fair to acknowledge. We have to be careful about how we address this issue given that. I think it's pathological, frankly. I think it's psychological harm that's done to people that causes them to switch, in a sense, what they are normally created for. But and this is, I think, Nicolosi does a good job in his book, A Parent's Guide to Preventing Homosexuality. The second problem with this genetic argument is that it's just faulty reasoning. Let's just say people were born homosexual. Just because they were born that way, it doesn't follow from that it's okay for them to do what they're doing. Some people might have been born violent. Let's, just observe that. Some guys think that they were born with a natural aversion to homosexuals, and so that when they get around homosexuals, they get angry and they want to punch them out. And that feels to them like a natural thing. Does this then justify gay bashing because it's natural for some heterosexual men? The answer, of course, is no. I've written a piece that's on our website, Todd, called Just Doing What Comes Naturally, and I explore this problem. And the difference, here's what I say. Animals do what comes naturally, if you want to put it bluntly. Human beings, though, look at their natural impulses, and they bring the natural impulses under control through moral thinking and moral decision-making. We don't do what comes naturally. And one could say that the difference between just doing what comes naturally and principled self-restraint is called civilization.
Greg Kokel is our guest. When we come back, his third and fourth arguments against the new view of Romans on homosexuality.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
17th century theologian Johann Gerhardt wrote of Christ's intercession for us in prayer. What will the Heavenly Father deny His beloved Son? What will our gracious Savior not obtain by the power and merit of His satisfaction accomplished for us? The shrine of heaven stands open to Him. Christ delivers our prayers to the secret counsel of God. Will the Father not hear Him? Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for November is called Meditations on Divine Mercy by Johann Gerhardt. You can order Meditations on Divine Mercy by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 or visit our website issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section and you'll find information on our Issues, Etc. book of the month for November, Meditations on Divine Mercy. When you call or write, mention Issues, Etc.
The Creator. Where'd He come from?
Answers with Ken Ham, co-author of the book, The Genesis Solution. Well, how do you answer people, Ken, when they try to stump you with a question, well, where did God come from?
You know, it is important for Christians to be able to give reasons for their faith, including the answer to this one. If we declare there's an infinite God who created all things, we need to be able to defend our faith. In fact, we're told in Romans that there's enough evidence in the world to convince everyone that God is creator. This evidence is obvious. We know that cars and airplanes don't just get here by chance. Somebody made them. When we look at the complexities of life, we recognize that there has to be an intelligence behind them because life is built on information and a code system. The Bible tells us, in the beginning God. In other words, the infinite creator has always been and always will be. This is the most logical scientific statement you could ever make. You see, if you don't believe in God, then you have to accept by blind faith that matter by itself arranged itself into a code and complex information systems. So where'd God come from? God wasn't creator. He is the infinite creator.
And does that mean that God also created the dinosaurs? And if so, was it millions of years ago or just thousands? Ken Ham answers those questions in a free booklet available on our website, AnswersRadio.com.
Good evening. It's 5:31 at AM 850 KFUO. The weather for St. Louis, mostly cloudy tonight, a chance for rain, low of about 50. For Tuesday, mostly cloudy once again, a continued chance for rain and a high near 62 right now in St. Louis. It's overcast and 56. And our last look at St. Louis traffic, westbound 40 between Hampton and 170, slow traffic there. Southbound 170 between Forest Park Parkway and 40. Some slow traffic in the right lane. Westbound 70 between Earth City Expressway and the Blanchette Bridge, slow traffic there. Westbound 40 between Chesterfield Parkway and the Boone Bridge, slow traffic. Let's take a look at the bridges. Eastbound 40 after Jefferson, slow traffic to the Poplar Street Bridge. And northbound 55 between Old MacArthur Bridge and the Poplar Street Bridge, slow traffic in the right lane. That's traffic and weather on AM 850 KFUO. I'm Craig Allen.
So you've taken a trip down the aisle and you're now Mr. and Mrs. Life couldn't be better, or your new spouse more perfect.
Love you, hon.
But you know, marriage is a long haul, and divorce seems to be everywhere. You want to keep the warm glow you feel now. It's time you discovered Focus on the Family with Dr. James Dobson. A half hour of sound advice for today's families. Focus on the Family.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Greg Kokel is our guest. He is founder of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California. If you're interested in more information on the topic we're discussing, the Romans 1, the new view and his response to it on homosexuality, he has authored an article on this subject in the latest Solid Ground newsletter. Now, if you'd like to receive the Solid Ground newsletter, the latest edition free, you can call them 1-800 the number 2, Reason, 1-800-2-R-E-A-S-O-N. It's called Solid Ground. That's the name of the newsletter, 1-800-2-Reason. Or you can check out the website for Stand to Reason by going to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Click on the Links with Regular Guests section, and you'll find a direct link to Greg Kokel and Stand to Reason. Greg, let's talk about another response. You said that not only is there no scientific evidence for what is called constitutional homosexuality, that is, I was born that way. You say not only is the concept of constitutional homosexuality foreign to the text of Paul's argument in Romans 1, if Paul is not talking about homosexuals, but talking, in other words, if he's not talking about a homosexual desire and he's conceding that it's natural, then who is he condemning?
Yeah, this is my next point, and that it just is an odd situation. If all who desire the same sex on the present view, okay, do so naturally, in other words, homosexuals are homosexuals because they were born that way. If you have a desire for the same sex, it's because you were born that way and you are then accepted from this condemnation by Paul. Then to whom is Paul speaking? Are we to understand him to be speaking about people who have no desire for the same sex, but still engage in sex with the same sex in spite of the fact that they don't have any desire for it. I mean, this is pretty odd. I mean, men aren't built that way, to put it simply. If they're going to have sex with anyone or anything, they have to have some kind of sexual desire for that so they can get sexually aroused. And in fact, it is precisely because of desire that they are having this sexual involvement, as Paul describes it here in verse 27. It says that they burned in their desire toward one another, men with men committing indecent acts. So he is identifying people here that are condemned who have a desire. If what these other people are saying is correct, that if you have a desire, then you have a desire naturally and Paul is not condemning you, then to whom is he speaking? You know, this doesn't make any sense to me. He's speaking to people who have no desire for homosexual sex, yet have it anyway when they shouldn't. Listen, if you don't have any desire for homosexual sex, you're not going to have it. So I can't see who he'd be condemning here.
Now, before we go on to your fourth, the coup de grace, as you have put it, of your response to this new view of Romans, let's take a phone call here at 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Dumont is calling from St. Louis. Hi, Dumont.
Hello.
Hello, Dumont.
Yes, I'd like to make a little comment here, and I want your comment on how I approach this.
Okay.
The way I go about it is I start off by saying, before the fall of Adam and Eve, okay, you with me?
Yes. Well, we were far.
we were all, I would say, you know, in complete union with God. We were in God's will.
Mm-hmm.
After the fall, however, we found in a complete disconnection and imbalance. And this imbalance is in the form of sin. And these imbalances, some of them are extreme in some and not as extreme in others. For example, one imbalance could be someone likes to kill, others like to rape. And therefore, in this case, there's, you know, affection and desire for the same sex, which is against God's will. So
right.
I kind of put it that way. And so we're all in the same bracket in the sense that we're trying to reestablish connection balance with God.
Dumont, this is a very good observation that it isn't just homosexuality that God is dealing with. It is just an example of the rebellion that all human beings have against God, whether homosexuality is their besetting sin or not. And as we read in the end of the chapter 1 there, we see all kinds of things: slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents. And in fact, you know, that was just one of five verses that list all these sins. Man, we're all covered by that. And so homosexuality is just one of the things on there. But it is one of the things. And so to go back there and say, gee, this is not being condemned by Paul, is just to miss the point of the passage.
So what is your final and scriptural response to the new view that Paul is not condoning what we know as homosexuality in Romans 1?
Yeah, well, since the argument is on their side that Paul is saying that we shouldn't, that people shouldn't violate their natural desires, all right, then, of course, that argument depends on Paul talking about natural desires. But that isn't what Paul is talking about at all. Paul is not unclear about what he means by natural. Now listen to the language here. For this reason, God gave them over to degrading passions, for their women exchanged the natural function for that which is unnatural. And in the same way, also the men abandoned the natural function of the woman and burned in their desire toward one another. The word function is a very specific word there in Greek. It's the word krisis. You can look it up in Strong's. It's number 5540. And I'll tell you what krisis means. It means function. It's very clear. And you can look at the Greek-English lexicon of the New Testament, and you get the same definition. Paul is not talking about natural desires. He is talking about natural functions. In fact, if you want to put it in the colloquial, he's talking about plumbing. He is talking about the human way God has created the human body to function together. And this is why he says that the men abandoned not their natural desires, but the natural function of the woman. You see, there's that prepositional phrase in there that's absolutely vital. And I think this is some of the clarity that is missing in some of the other translations that comes out crystal clear in the New American Standard. what God has ordained a certain function sexually for men and women, and he has created a complementary sexual apparatus, the sexual genital organs in each, to work together to accomplish a particular function. Men don't function with men, and women do not function with women sexually the way God intended. And so when those two are together in that way, they are abandoning the natural function. And that is what God, what Paul is condemning here. In other words, the unnatural function, or pursuing the unnatural function, is an example of what Paul calls an ungodly or immoral or a perverse desire.
Finally, with 1 minute, over against what everyone is contending about what Paul has to say here vis-a-vis homosexuality, what does Christ deliver to us as the natural, normal function and relationship and desire between male and female?
Thanks for the softball there, Todd. Matthew 19:4-5, very simple. Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this cause a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. And this is clearly a sexual reference, though more is entailed there. God's ordained plan from the beginning is one man, one woman. Not a man and a man, not a woman and a woman, not a man and two women, not a man and five women, not three men and a girl, not a man and an animal, one man and one woman. And Jesus goes right back to the creation order, which should be very clear. And in fact, it is clear to everybody. And this is why all civilized society has always automatically affirmed this relationship, which underscores Paul's statement here in the issue of natural revelation, that everybody knows what's really true. And if they deviate from it, they're suppressing the truth and unrighteousness in rebellion against God.
Greg Kokel, thank you very much for being our guest. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Greg Kokel is founder of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California. He has authored an article on this subject in the latest Solid Ground newsletter, 1-800-2-REASON, 1-800-2-REASON. Ask for the Solid Ground newsletter or go to our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the Links with Regular Guests link, and you'll find Greg Kokel and Stand to Reason. Tomorrow on the program, an update on the euthanasia case of Terry Schiavo. Wesley Smith will be our guest, and we will continue our series on the Liturgy of Holy Baptism with Pastor Will Whedon of St. Paul Lutheran Church in Hamel, Illinois. That's tomorrow on Issues Etc. It's just as natural as the way God made us. The function and the desire go together. God intends it for the good of man, the good of woman. And anything else, really, beyond that common sense approach is just twisting the Word of God. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.